Good afternoon. Welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, November 3rd, 2007. I'm Harley Schlanger, and I will be your host today. On today's program, we're going to examine and dissect a movement which was designed to create a mass-based fascist movement targeting the youth of America for recruitment. As we will demonstrate, this movement was launched by a gang which is using a model which is centuries old, going back to Paolo Sarpi and Venice. It's a movement which is anti-science and anti-technology, though it claims to be a product of the so-called high-tech revolution. It's a movement which, while proclaiming to be decentralized and anti-hierarchical, is actually controlled by the highest level of the financial oligarchy. And while proclaiming itself to be democratic, it is transforming a section of those in the 16 to 30-year-old age group to be stormtroopers, cold-blooded killers for a fascist movement. I'm talking about two interrelated aspects of the so-called digital revolution: interactive websites such as MySpace and Facebook, and violent video games, which are already leading contributing factors in mass murder, as in Littleton, Colorado, and last spring at Virginia Tech University. In remarks last Tuesday night, Lyndon LaRouche identified these computer cybernetic operations as, quote, mental cemeteries aimed at trapping the entire youth generation and turning them into cyber fodder for the new Hitler movement, unquote. Joining me on the LaRouche Show today to discuss this will be two LaRouche Youth Movement members, Ouyang Teng, whose article, Video Games and the Wars of the Future, appeared in the August 10th, 2007 EIR and is available on LaRouchePub.com, and Cody Jones, who is a member of the Los Angeles County Democratic Central Committee. We will also be joined later by a recent convert to the cyberspace revolution who will attempt to offer a defense for it. So Ouyang and Cody, welcome to the LaRouche Show.
Thanks, Harvey.
Thank you.
As you know, a part of my function over the years has been to look at the culture, or rather the accelerating degeneration of culture, so we can create an awareness of how the present-day financial oligarchy launches synthetic movements to destroy human creativity, reducing the majority of the population to the status of what LaRouche calls human cattle. One of the things we've discovered is that the ultimate weapon in social control is to convince youth that they are voluntarily, democratically, and with free will choosing what is, in fact, mental slavery. You two recently presented a forum at a cadre school on the origins of cyberspace as a mechanism of social control. So I'd like to begin by asking you, first Cody and then Ouyang, to summarize your findings.
Okay, so I had centered, this is Cody, on the figure of Norbert Wiener, who people may know was a student of Bertrand Russell, who committed his whole life to one world government, who had proposed nuking the Soviet Union prior to his finding out that they themselves had developed the bomb, and who had written numerous attacks on people like Leibniz and Bernard Riemann, people who are at the foundation of Lyndon LaRouche's own intellectual development and his discoveries in physical economy. And so effectively what you have with Wiener, who coined the term cybernetics and developed the whole idea of information theory, was an attempt to, as you had mentioned earlier, Harley, revive or bring back to the forefront the tradition of Paolo Sarpi, which is the tradition of eliminating creativity, eliminating discovery, and clouding it over with the idea of information and linearization of that discovery process. And so what he does in his book, Cybernetics, is initially he starts off with saying we can eliminate such things as trigonometry from our investigations in science, particularly as it relates to computers, which in effect is to eliminate that whole arc of development that Lyndon LaRouche has emphasized, going back to the ancient Pythagoreans and Egyptians in their work on spherics, up through Riemann's work on hypergeometries.
Well, in doing that, Cody, Wiener is actually following an old model of attacking the original discovery and trying to formalize it, right?
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what he does. He says, the thing which is more appropriate to dealing with the kind of the so-called science of information theory is to use formulations that come out of Brownian motion as opposed to elliptical functions, etc. Brownian motion is simply the idea that everything is random and that everything can be understood by simple statistical analysis. You can't really know principle. You can't know the truth behind anything, but you can get statistical analysis and an idea of how random events will probably turn out. And so in doing that, he had, like I said, wiped out the idea of discovery, wiped out that whole arc of development that Lyndon LaRouche has been pointing to, and replaced it with this formalization, sort of flat earth view of reality, and created an alternative reality.
And I guess the question then is, once he came up with the so-called science of cybernetics, which, by the way, in one of his articles, he said the science of cybernetics is the study of effective messages of control. So that's somewhat interesting there. But he reduces human creativity to an interface between man and machines and says that essentially humans are organisms through which bits of information flow and are processed. So that's where you have the destruction of the creative idea, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, if you look at, for example, the work that's been coming out of the so-called basement teams, they've been looking at the development of things like elliptical functions, higher transcendentals. These are things where singularities pop up as paradoxes from a lower system as you try to approach a higher system. What he does is says we can eliminate that and replace those singularities with infinite approximations. It's tantamount to the idea that was put forward that you could square the circle, that we can replace the circle with an infinite series of straight lines and angles. And by doing that, you eliminate the actual creative process and the whole history of the development of modern science.
You're listening to Cody Jones. We're on the LaRouche Show, Saturday, November 3rd, 2007, and we're investigating the fascist nature of cyberspace. Now, Ouyang, why don't you pick up from what Cody has just developed in terms of the framework launched by Wiener in cybernetics. How did that end up getting transferred into the computer revolution?
Well, I would also just add, in terms of Wiener's work, if you look at the way that he describes the science of cybernetics, he's pretty self-consciously aligning himself with the tradition of Zeus, because he even goes through the parable of Prometheus, but says that the lesson to draw from that is that every time we make scientific discoveries, it comes back to bite us, and that therefore science has to effectively be controlled by an elite. And makes a very big point of saying the entire universe is governed by the law of entropy. And so if the entire universe is simply a chaotic, random process, then in that context, he says, we study cybernetics, which are these local areas where certain systems are trying to fight this tendency towards disorder. But the effect being that you eliminate universals from any consideration of cause. You're simply looking at what he calls feedback mechanisms and through the flow of information. So if you think about the way that people talk about globalization today, the internet revolution, the information age, all of that was already laid down as a pattern by Wiener's work and what came afterwards, and basically reducing the entire universe and therefore societies and human culture within that universe as just a sort of random accumulation of different interactions, which is the appeal of things like MySpace and all of these social networking sites, which is that you've got no constraints. And if you think about the video game world, you know, this is in a very well documented history. This came out of the research that was done starting with the Defense Department and the Advanced Research Projects Agency, ARPA, which became DARPA. And that was all coming off of Wiener's work and looking at how do you create command and control systems in the military. And it's well known that this then laid the foundation for things like the internet, the personal computer, and increasingly as you get into the 80s and 90s, as the idea of the information age becomes the idea of driving economic policy, then it becomes the fusion of entertainment and the military to say, well, we've got to create a military that's adequate to a world where there's going to be no nation states. And therefore, we're going to have drawing from a pool, a population which is increasingly submerged in virtual reality. Well, these are going to be the foot soldiers for the 21st century. And that became what today is coming out in the form of things like Halo 3 and these other video games, which is directly the product of research going from the military, crossing over into the entertainment industry, and using the theories of Wiener and the people that came after him to say, well, we're really moving into an era of post-humanism, and the human individual is going to be reduced to simply effectively a digital system or something that can be interfaced with a digital system. And that's really, in terms of the cultural aspect behind what you've got in the video games, this is what, you know, what people are putting themselves into as they sit in front of the screen, you know, for 4 or 5 hours at a time.
Okay, now I want to go into that a little bit more. Let me just give our listeners the email address they can send questions to. If you have questions on what's being discussed, please email us at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. And also, we'll be giving you a number to call later in the program if you want to get some backup material on this. You can also go to the LaRouchePact.com website to see a very spooky vision of Nancy Pelosi right now. Now, oh yeah, I want to just follow up something that you brought up, which is the role of the ARPA, or later DARPA. The defense community was very much involved in the beginning at working on computers, but there's a mythology out there which is promoted by people such as Stuart Brand of the Whole Earth Catalog, which is that, well, the defense community was trying to develop it through mainframes and gigantic systems, but fortunately a bunch of pot-smoking hippies infiltrated this defense community operation in the Bay Area and provided the anti-hierarchical democratic quality which we see today in the Internet. So I'd like to know what either of you think about that. How do you refute that argument?
Well, I think the key is if you look at a figure like someone like Timothy Leary, you look at some of the gurus of the counterculture back in the 60s and 70s who were the icons of the LSD drug culture, you know, the tune-in, drop-out phenomenon. I mean, these guys themselves said that virtual reality and the cyber culture was a advancement on the kind of social control and mind-altering experiences that you could have with even something like LSD. And so these guys, as Leary said, he said the biggest problem we're running into is this commitment, you know, this Judeo-Christian commitment to one God, one religion, one reality. He said this has plagued Europe and the United States for centuries. And so their whole polemic was against the idea that there is such a thing as reality. And it's not a surprise that these are the guys who come out as the leading promoters of a virtual form of economics in the form of globalized hedge fund operations, computer modeling, and, you know, the idea of using the Internet to replace production. So they were self-consciously in the driver's seat in the transition from, you know, the counterculture to the cyberculture.
Well, you mentioned something really interesting there about this idea of replacing production. And this is one of the points that Lyndon LaRouche has been unique in making, connecting this idea of cybernetics with the post-industrial society. And I've just been working on Greenspan's autobiography, where he talks about how we've moved beyond matter in the economy. It's now the light economy. And there's this whacked-out piece by John Perry Barlow, who was the former so-called lyricist of the Grateful Dead, called A Declaration of the Independence of Cyberspace. And in it, he says, in cyberspace, there is no matter. Cyberspace does not lie within your borders. He says, we are forming our own social contract, but it's a world that is both everywhere and nowhere, but it is not where bodies live. Cody, I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah, well, what you see with cyberspace, it is the end of history doctrine. Because, as Lyndon LaRouche has pointed out, history really is a higher order succession of discoveries. Discoveries of principle, whether it's in science or art, statecraft. When cyberspace, discovery has been eliminated because you're in a fixed system with a fixed set of axioms where everything that you do has to take place according to that, to some logical deduction from that system. So by its very nature, it is creativity, discovery of a new principle is banned. And so within that, you could never, I mean, hypothetically, you have someone like Wiener who discusses the possibility that computers or machines could start to produce other machines. They could become self-replicating. Well, even were that to take place in that system, you'd be still operating based off a fixed logical system where, as, say, those machines started to come up against real boundaries in terms of depletion of resources, et cetera, that system would never allow for the discovery of a new principle, of a new resource, to overcome the boundaries which they are running up against. And this is, you know, indicative of the problem we're running into in our modern economy, which is people who think from this standpoint have no idea how to now deal with the kind of real boundaries we're running into in our physical economy, like lack of water, energy, breaking down of infrastructure, et cetera. So it really is, it's a disease which is dooming mankind right now.
Well, Cody, let me bring this to the question also now of the social engineering websites like MySpace and Facebook. You're one of the founding members of the LaRouche Youth Movement, and we on the West Coast noticed that young people were, in a sense, there was a hunger among a section of the youth 7-8 years ago for truth, for purpose, for meaning. And I'm wondering, have you noticed that that's changing a bit now as we have younger people who have grown up completely immersed in virtual reality and in the computer revolution?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you still have the singularities. You can't completely kill the human spirit. But one thing which many of us have discussed and noticed is that on the campuses now, the ability to interact socially has been almost totally destroyed. Just carrying out of a simple conversation, human-to-human interaction, where you actually use your speaking voice and have to communicate an idea in real time to a live human being, that's really been destroyed. So you've seen just a general literacy level and an ability to interact socially has been severely crippled. And obviously, as LaRouche has made the point, as our movement has been committed to, it's really the social process that new ideas are communicated from one human being to another through metaphor, through paradox. And to the extent that that's being attacked and destroyed, it's really an attack on the ability to communicate new ideas.
And how prevalent is MySpace with people we're meeting now, say, who are freshmen, 18, 19, 20-year-olds? Cody?
It's quite prevalent. I mean, you have these phenomena where a lot of people like to claim that they're not on it because it's becoming one of those things where it became so cool that now it's not cool anymore. But we've actually caught some of our contacts who are like, no, I'm not on MySpace. That's not cool anymore. Then you go on MySpace and look up their name and right their page pops up. So it's very prevalent. It's a dominant form of social activity in today's culture.
Well, here are two quotes from the so-called co-founders of MySpace. One is a guy named DeWolf who said, "This generation wants to be known. They want to be famous. MySpace facilitates that. This generation is self-involved." And then he later describes MySpace as a lifestyle choice. The other founder, Tom Anderson, who is supposedly everybody's friend, says, "I think of it, MySpace, as the reality TV of the internet." Now, Ouyang, you wrote on the question of the violent video games. I assume that's quite prevalent also. What was the most startling thing you discovered from looking at this?
Well, number one is that the axioms behind the research that led to this stuff are actually out in the open. This is a perfect example of an open conspiracy, which are generally the most dangerous kind. You don't have to go searching behind the curtains to find out why this is being used to destroy a whole generation of people. Wiener is very open with it. The people who are carrying out the research today, the front end of the research, the simulations technology, which is being fused into the entertainment, the mass marketing of these games, these guys really believe in the fusion between the human being and the machine as effectively a cyborg. And, these are people who probably grew up with a little too much RoboCop and Terminator and, this kind of outlook. And, science fiction actually plays a huge role if you look at the literature.
Right.
And even just in the nature of the work itself, there's the kind of flagship institution for simulations and video game research, as it's paired with the military, is this outfit down in the University of Southern California called the Institute for Creative Technologies. And their mandate, maybe it's their unofficial mandate, but it's open and explicit, is to create the holodeck from the Starship Enterprise, which is the simulations room where effectively you can create reality inside of a room, any kind of reality you choose. And this is really what these guys are driving for.
Well, both
of view of the world is totally dissociated.
Both of you live in California, where, in a sense, we're having a social experiment of a fascist, George Shultz, working with a democratic fascist, Felix Roetten, to create a governor who some think is a cyborg, who is there to impose fascism through cuts in social welfare, cuts in education, cuts in health care, while portraying himself as a man of the people. So in a sense, we may already be further down this road to the brave new world than most people think.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
one point on that, Harley. It's important for people to know that, as we mentioned with people like Wiener, one of the conferences, the first Cybernetics conferences, one of the attendees there was a guy named Kurt Lewin, who was part of the whole social engineering project that came out of the 40s and developed into the hippies movement. Well, one of the proteges of Kurt Lewin was, in fact, George Shultz, who studied under Lewin, then went and studied under Milton Friedman. So he sort of brings those two schools together, and now he's controlling this cyborg, as you said, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, we've decided on this program we're going to be fair and balanced, as Fox News claims to be. So we've invited the owner of Fox, Rupert Murdoch, to come on the program to present the other side from what you've been hearing so far. So let me welcome him. Good afternoon, Mr. Murdoch, or should I call you Sir Rupert?
Good day. Yes, that's fine.
All right. So you described yourself recently as a digital immigrant. Why did you decide to buy MySpace?
Well, it really has to do with just trying to advertise, that's a big part of it. I mean, I think that this is an area in which my news enterprise has not been involved, and getting involved in the Internet is an important area to conduct business, and I think we can make a lot of money off of it. So that was the initial conception.
So it's a money operation?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, spend a bit here in the investment, but you do have access to a lot of people consuming ideas, spending their time on the Internet, and a lot of young people. So that was the idea.
What about the charge that some people make that you wanted MySpace as part of a profiling operation?
Well, in a certain way, it's important to have ability to see what people are into, to see what likes and dislikes, so you can, advertise to them. Well, we do have a certain way of monitoring the way people, what movie they like, they don't read books anymore, what video games they like and things like that. So we can use that information and sell it to different companies and advertise back.
Now, this is a question that may get you a little upset, because you have an image as a conservative. But what do you say to those who say that MySpace is nothing but a digital meat market in which people invent identities for the purposes of hooking up for sex?
Well, that's obviously it's a bit of a stretch. I don't necessarily think that everyone's doing that. I mean, there's a big discussion about you want to socialize, you want to meet people that you may not meet. You know, young people today are very, very antisocial, so to speak. So this gives them a chance to express themselves freely. And honestly, I think part of the problem is these days, you know, religion is becoming less and less effective. And so people start thinking, well, I don't want any God or anything controlling my decisions, my emotions. And in the end, you know, what this creates is a condition where people can decide for themselves, where they can, you know, engage in what they like and what they dislike, and no one can tell them what to do. I think that's the real point here.
Well, it sounds like you're buying into this line that it's democratic.
Oh, definitely. Well, it's even beyond democracy or anything. It is, I think, it's globalization pushed to its extreme. It really does knock down the borders. It creates a totally free market, and in which, you know, people can decide what things they're going to consume with no one really telling them what to do.
Well, what would you say? You've been listening to our conversation thus far, and
I haven't. I don't really want to spend my time doing that. So.
So what would you say to the charge we've made on this program that MySpace is really just a component of psychological warfare against youth on behalf of a fascist movement run by financial oligarchs such as yourself?
Well, you better watch what you say. Because really, it does go back. I mean, you look at Bertrand Russell. I mean, he's one of my mentors, one of my people that I associated with maybe back and forth in between when I was working for Lord Beaverbrook back during the time of the Nazis and afterwards. And, the idea in the beginning was to have a society where we could get rid of dictatorships, get rid of government in general. And, you know, Huxley and Adorno, they had different ideas on this. And, you know, you want to try to convince people basically that they're making their own decisions, and that the conclusions they come to are purely on their own. So it, in effect, as Huxley said, you know, you create a concentration camp without tears. I mean, that's honestly, I think that's where you and your fellows belong, because the things that you're doing are not really useful in this economy. And that's one thing I did want to make sure that you and anyone else here that's listening has a certain understanding of, that this is not really going to be in existence for much longer.
So you actually believe that globalization will succeed and that you can induce youth to destroy their own minds?
Oh, definitely. Well, this it's not something that what is their minds is not necessarily anything that is valuable. I mean, I don't know. We've been monitoring different things, Harley. We've been watching what you've been doing. And obviously, I think that, you know, you should be eating grass is what you and your friends here, because, you know, these things are not necessary anymore. We can have one nation. You know, we don't need nation states. We don't need any of these things. So, you know, Bertrand Russell, he had the conception that, you know, as I said, religion plays a reducing amount of control on the population, but the media, movies, newspapers, things like that are increasing in their ability to help people make decisions on what they should think. Now, I would put the Internet in that list, for sure.
Well, Sir Rupert, we hope you'll stay on, and maybe Cody and Ouyang will have a question for you, but for the moment, we'd like you to be quiet and sit back and listen.
Oh yes. Can I get the last name of that? Cody, what? Cody.
So, Cody, how accurate is this characterization of Rupert Murdoch in your thinking?
Yeah, I think it's right on point. I mean, it's very clear if you look at the figure that was mentioned, Bertrand Russell. He himself had been very explicit about his intention to create a one-world government, a one-world dictatorship, and Murdoch is simply an expression of that ideology.
And right. Ouyang, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was agreeing. That's right.
Now, when we look at something like what happened at Virginia Tech, I know, I don't know if you were in the war room at the time, Ouyang, but there was an effort to bring up this issue of video games. And one of the things we discovered is that Bill Gates and Microsoft, who Gates just pumped some money into Facebook, that Gates has a vested interest in these video games. Ouyang, would you say something on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the we've done some work looking at the financial control over the whole video game apparatus. It's, you know, grown into, they made a big deal about the fact that it surpassed, you know, movies in terms of gross sales and worldwide or in the United States and so forth. So, you know, what you find when you begin to look at the control, the financial control of things that people think are just, you know, part of their culture, part of the youth culture, something that's their own, actually you find that it only exists to the degree that it's been financed, supported, funded, and created by hedge funds, by the biggest financial players in the world. And, yeah, Gates, you know, plays into this thing. There was a famous kind of little movie clip circulating, which you can find online, which shows him actually entering one of his own games, Doom, and, you know, blowing away a couple of the demons in Doom as part of a promotional package for Microsoft. So, you know, these guys, a lot of them, someone like Gates probably believes a lot of the believes some of their own propaganda about, you know, the wonders of virtual reality. And I don't know if Gates quite fits into the category of the you know, the top oligarchs in the world, but one of the problems with these guys is that they are actually, because of inbreeding and, you know, maybe inbreeding through internet chat rooms and other things, they have actually reduced the quality of the gene pool among the oligarchy. So these guys are not too bright. And actually, you can see that in the fact that their financial system's collapsing.
No, they're not going to survive it either. No, it's not. Actually, if you look at the Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal, you can see clearly that it's not collapsing. That's a lie.
Uh-huh. Now, Cody, let me ask you a question on this, because we talk to a lot of people who argue that MySpace is just a way of communicating, a way of staying in touch with their friends.
That's right.
When you run into somebody who says that, how do you answer them?
Well, first off, you have to ask them what they're communicating. I mean, we have to differentiate between exchanging information and trying to find a way to exchange bodily fluids and actually communicating ideas. And that's effectively what MySpace is. It's just a way for people to avoid reality and avoid discussion of ideas and, you know, sort of let their inhibitions run wild. So, you know, I mean, the best way to do it is just to make fun of it. I mean, I don't think anyone, if you really corner them, can seriously say that MySpace is a means of, you know, communicating profound ideas respecting man and nature.
Well, but I've heard people say that fascism, the essence of fascism, is trying to stop people from getting on MySpace. Why would someone say something like that?
Well, that's part of the brainwashing. If you look at the history of, say, the fascist movements in Germany, it came out of the cabaret movement, which was a real free sex, you know, sex with anything that moves,
the counterculture.
Just pure decadence. Yeah, the counterculture. And that's what then spawned the fascist movement in Germany in particular. Now, it was out of those same networks that the people came that then produced that counterculture, which is now the essence of the current MySpace. Because on there, that's what it is. You're free from any constraints of physical reality. You can be a pedophile, you can be a rapist, you can be a killer, you can be a dope smoker, you can do whatever you want, free of the constraints of reality and morality and physical economy, etc. And so it is the basis of a fascist movement, as LaRouche pointed out. Because when you get someone in that fantasy state, if all of a sudden you pull the plug, the lights go out, the power goes down because we haven't invested, you're going to have a bunch of enraged homicidal killers.
Who know how to kill now because they've been on these video games.
Right.
Now, I'm going to read you a quote from someone who claims to be a very successful practitioner of MySpace, This is from a profile on MySpace in Vanity Fair. This guy says, I know guys who are not even as good-looking as me who get laid like crazy because of MySpace. I'm actually shy. There are women I wouldn't go up to at a club, but I'll email them on MySpace. For some reason, you get on there, and all the barriers come down. Girls will say things they'd never say to you in public. And there's the mystery element, the intangible thing. Is he real? It makes them want you more. I mean, a part of this is just an unleashing of the fantasy and libidos, exactly as Aldous Huxley described in his Brave New World, huh? Oh, Young, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, and of course the way that people now learn economics, or whether it's through school or just what they're getting from popular culture, is that the fundamental driver for economics today is your libido anyway. So if you can, if you have access to more, I think as that guy's quoted, more ass than ever before, then really you're playing a fundamentally important role in the economy.
Now,
that's justification.
Pardon me?
I said that's the rationale.
Right, right. Now, we brought up this question of the interface of news, sports, and entertainment. Of course, Sir Rupert, that's what you're doing with Fox, right?
Oh, Roy, definitely. Anything to, people have, the way I see it is you've got a certain amount of time. People have time. And more increasingly, people have more time because there's not many jobs. So one of the things is you can monopolize that time. You've got iPods, you've got the Internet. You can actually purchase that and try to take that away, advertise to them the entire time. So that's what you can do with sports. You can do that with sex, everything. It works very well. And the thing I think you guys are all wrong on is that you see it as bad, because honestly, I see this as definitely, this is what people want. I'm just providing them with what they want themselves.
So people want to live fantasy lives.
Definitely.
Well, isn't that the whole purpose of virtual reality? I mean, Cody, you were talking about this earlier in terms of the attempt to free people from a sense of responsibility about society. If you're trapped in a fantasy world 24 hours a day, you can see the auto industry close down, houses being foreclosed, banks collapsing, but you're still online in your fantasy until you can no longer pay the electric bill. So isn't that basically what we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of it is that if you look at people's entire education, their way they're raised, and then the economy that they develop in, they grow up in a world where the idea of being able to intervene to change a reality which they may not like has been robbed of them. The sense of the human intervention into reality to change it for the better has been taken away. And that would otherwise potentially create frustration, revolt, etc. So that then that's pacifies through then presenting them, well, here's your alternative. You can't actually change the world, but what you can do is you can change reality through the internet, through these kind of MySpace fantasies, etc. So it becomes a way to sort of, it really is a concentration camp of the mind, which without tears.
I want to say something too, because people probably know we've got the LaRouche Pack, we've got a website, which our intent, we're maybe a little ways off, but is to take over the internet with reason. But the key to the effectiveness of our website versus, say, something like moveon.org is that our website is effective and active because it's based on what we're doing as a movement in real life, on the ground, around the world. And it functions to actually further and deepen the dialogue around the actual strategic nature of the situation we're in, as opposed to just throwing up a website and saying, well, if we can get, X number of people on and somehow aware, then that is going to magically create the kind of mass spontaneous social change that's needed. And that's really no different than the mentality, the ideology behind the free market, which is that you've got, this mysterious invisible hand which somehow is going to regulate the universe. And more often than not, as we've pointed out to people, it ends up spanking people that and doesn't actually, it's part of the whole idea that you give up any kind of commitment to responsibility for the direction society goes.
Well, you know, they say that Bush said to Greenspan, is that the invisible hand in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, what we keep coming back to then is this question of human interaction, as opposed to people on a process of self-discovery in virtual reality, which, of course, is not a process of self-discovery. It's a process of self-masturbation. Now, I want to get back to this question of real discovery then as the counter, because I hope we get some people to listen to this program, and if you're listening to it, you can tell your friends to get on it. And it's archived at the LaRouchePub.com website, and we intend to follow this through. We're going to continue a campaign. We may be putting out a pamphlet titled Goebbels in Your Laptop, because this is an important issue. But we also have to present the solution, and this is where it gets a little more difficult. But both of you have been involved in choral work. You're involved in the science work. What is it that is the counter to someone who's looking for an identity in a phony made-up identity posted on MySpace, or the sense of power you get from massive kills in a video game? What's the counter to that, either Cody or O'Young? Cody, you want to go ahead?
Oh. Yeah, well, the counter to that is what's coming out of primarily the work that's being done in the Virginia area, in the Leesburg area, out of the basement and also the music work, where what you find, and this is the principle that Leibniz had brought up, it's the principle upon which our nation is founded, which is that real human happiness is derived through discovery of principle and the communication of those discoveries to other human beings, developing a sense of immortality through discovery and through passing on a greater potential to the next generation, that's what lives beyond you. And so this is what we're doing, is reviving the arc of development of that process of discovery and the history of creativity on planet Earth.
Listen, you're making me sick over here with what you're saying. This is the most stupid thing I've ever heard. You're trying to say that ideas have some kind of effect on society or on history. This is childishness. Listen, let's put Harley aside here. Let's look at the facts. You guys are young, you're bright. Why don't you guys come back into college, get a degree, I can even help you out, and you guys get into something where you can actually change something, because really, working with this, doing these discussions, singing, these things are going to have no effect, and actually, I think I'm done with this.
I think we just lost Sir Rupert. He's probably going to go play with his mouse. Oh, yeah, and we have a question that was emailed in on MySpace and the presidential campaigns. I see that I think on New Year's Day there's actually going to be what they call a MySpace presidential debate. And the person writes into us, it looks like this has invaded the presidential campaign. What about that? What about young people and the presidential candidates? I mean, first, if you have any thoughts on MySpace hosting a presidential debate, I'd like to know that. But what about this question of getting young people involved, not just sending emails, but actually out in the street and organizing?
I wasn't aware that the presidential candidates were looking for new sex partners, but maybe that's a scandal we'll have to follow up.
Uh-huh.
No, but I know Cody and I both joined the LaRouche movement during a presidential campaign. It was when LaRouche was running his own presidential campaign. And, you know, LaRouche has never made a distinction between electoral politics and engaging the youth and how to create a renaissance. I mean, that was never something that was separate, dichotomized or separate things. And the whole idea that the way you appeal to youth is, you know, with beer, music, and bribes, which is effectively how these operations are run, is itself shows the kind of view that these guys have of not just youth, but of human beings in general. Because I think if you look at the election last year, you know, we actually unleashed a revolutionary process inside the youth generation, the 18 to 35 generation, around the midterm elections. And it was around a campaign to expose the inner workings of a you know, this Lynn Cheney campus Gestapo operation, and from the fact that in real discussions with people, but in creating a mass effect around the country as part of a political mobilization with the idea that the youth were going to be responsible for the direction of the country, and engaging people in an actual dialogue around what ideas are needed for the future of the country, and then saying from that, how are we going to implement it? That actually unleashed a process where you had, you know, record numbers of youth voters come out to put the Democrats in with a landslide. Now, I've heard the argument that this was done because of blogs and chat rooms and things like that, and I always have to wonder, well, if it was just simply a matter of, you know, getting enough people online with information, we never would have had Bush, either the first time or definitely not with the re-election.
Right. Now, this gets back to the question of humor and human interaction. And I'd like to direct this next question to Cody. We have a rather long email from John Durham, who writes about his excitement of going back to the ideas of the Founding Fathers. And he said he initially discovered LaRouche from reading Dope Incorporated and then The Political Economy of the American Revolution. And he's very excited by the work that's coming up now with the Patriot Files, the revival of the study of the American system around James Fenimore Cooper. Cody, you want to say something about that project?
Yeah, well, one thing that LaRouche has recognized in addressing both this problem of the MySpace, Facebook, et cetera, is that this is a consequence of our having been robbed of our sense of history, of where this country came from, and consequently losing sight of where it's intended to go. So what's been launched is a project to really delve deep into the ideas and the figures who shaped and made America possible. And one of those leading figures is James Fenimore Cooper, both in terms of his communicating an idea of the ideals of the United States, what it's intended to represent, but also as a figure who embodied the method of real intelligence work, which LaRouche has often pointed to, that intelligence is not the spook world that is often portrayed, but intelligence is understanding the fundamental battle between oligarchism and the humanist fight typified by Plato, Kuza, through Kepler, et cetera, and the Founding Fathers. And so embodied in that is James Fenimore Cooper as one of the leading figures in shaping the period that led into then the Lincoln Revolution. So this is something which the youth are now embarking on and really trying to understand, what is our real history? Where did we come from, and how do we move forward from the dark age we're presently collapsing into?
Well, it seems that a common point that both of you have been making as members of the youth movement is that, in fact, the momentary or the moment-to-moment titillation that one gets from the so-called entertainment of the Internet is actually dwarfed by the genuine emotion and passion and excitement of discovering that you have a mind that can affect events in the world. And I presume that's a big part of what you're talking about. So how do we go out? What are you doing on the campuses up in the Bay Area, Ouyang, where in a sense you're going head-to-head against the cyberspace, the Silicon Valley? You know, some people think Silicon Valley is the women on MySpace, but there actually is a Silicon Valley up there, and you've got people who have made huge amounts of money, essentially with swindles on the new economy. How do you communicate these deeper ideas to people when you meet them on campuses?
Well, this is, you know, the difference between living in a fixed system and actually confronting one's mind and someone else's mind with the paradoxes of the actual universe. I mean, what you get with the MySpace, Internet, video game phenomenon, as Cody was mentioning, is just really a more distilled version of a totally fixed axiomatic system, which may be more and more sophisticated as you get better and better graphics and, you know, more and more computing power and so forth. But you're always within a fixed axiomatic logical deductive system. And that's how most people live their lives, whether they're, you know, in the Internet or in general.
It's saying, that's a comfort zone then. It doesn't challenge
you
too much.
There's this certain belief structure that you have to sort of follow, and, you know, you think that get you by day to day. And what we do is, you know, something as simple as confronting something with someone with a geometrical problem, the idea of, you know, working through themselves some actual, you know, scientific or simple geometrical problem, either at the table or, you know, coming into the office, and recognizing that even in the act of trying to discuss what's true as opposed to having the terms of the discussion be, you know, what's popular, even the idea that you're going to try to figure out what's true itself is a confrontation with the culture. And you'll find that there, most people, and given the, you know, the right kind of, you know, environment where they're not constantly bombarded with other stuff, that's what they're going to want to choose. That's what they're going to want to explore. And we've got to create the political conditions where that's evoked in a larger and larger mass of the population.
Cody, let me just go a little bit from our topic. We have about 10 minutes to go, and I wanted to get into the, just briefly, the question of the mobilization for the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act. We've seen in the last couple of days that this has been taken up in the Congress, albeit not directly typified by the cowardice of most of the congressmen. But John Conyers read into the Congress the other day the Michigan state resolution that's going to be voted on soon, calling for the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act of Lyndon LaRouche to be adopted. And then Congressman Al Green from Houston, who's been constantly confronted by the LaRouche youth movement here, asking him to do something. He asked on three occasions to an Undersecretary of the Treasury, what about a freeze on foreclosures? I know you have a resolution before the Los Angeles County Democratic Central Committee coming up, I guess, in a week or so. What do you think the prospects are for passage there, given that California is in one of the centers of the collapse of the housing market?
Well, we've gotten a very positive response from what we might consider the grassroots of the Democratic Party. I think the prospect of getting that through in this upcoming, I guess it would be probably this week, is pretty high. I mean, the roadblock is at the top, but fortunately we've got some friends here in Los Angeles. We've done a lot of organizing here. People know that we are the principal adversaries of people like Cheney and Schwarzenegger, et cetera. So I think we'll get it through. And we've just, in this week alone, the Homeowner Bank Protection Act, a form of resolution, was passed through the Pomona City Council. We've got other ones pending in a couple other city councils around here. So the momentum is building, and it really is a function of leadership. At a certain point, all the clouding of reality in the MySpace can't be defeated, or can be defeated at the point that you introduce real leadership in a time of crisis, which is we're demonstrating that as a proof of principle now.
Well, speaking of real leadership, Ouyang, you're right up there in your area is the patron saint of misleadership, namely Nancy Pelosi. Are we getting into her district with the, since LaRouche has identified her as the problem, the block point in the Congress for getting rid of Cheney, have we been getting some responses up in the Bay Area on our LaRouche's call for her to step down?
Yeah, we've gone out with some pretty provocative signs showing the need for, you know, Congress to get a new facelift and putting Nancy's mug up there with the screws bolted in her head. And generally what we're finding is that there's no love for her, even in her own backyard. We went to some of the more hardcore districts in San Francisco, and they're finding broad agreement with the fact that Pelosi's no good. We're also finding on top of that just the general disgust with the whole leadership in the Congress. So that's the crucial element, which is that it's never just simply a fact of people being disgusted with the current system. I mean, the fact that Congress is at 10.7% approval, lower than Cheney, shows that people recognize there's a vacuum of leadership. We don't have to convince them of that. But the danger is if you get people in that kind of state of mind, if they're simply pessimistic, then they're perfect fodder for some kind of new fascist movement. And as long as Cheney's in there, the threat of a new 9/11 is still active. So it's what Cody's saying. If you actually come in, provide real political leadership, that's something that people can respond to, which will tend to break what seems right now like the dominant consensus.
Well, it seems as though that's the central issue then. As Lynn often does, he gets right to the heart of things. On the one hand, you've got Cheney in the danger of war with Iran. On the other hand, you have the clear indications, especially this last week, of the breakdown of the financial system. The Merrill Lynch writing off huge amounts of money, Citibank, the Federal Reserve having to pump in $41 billion just to keep the banks open. And at the same time, then, you've got the question of why it is that so many people are passive. And you could say it's Pelosi, it's the misleadership at the top. But I think ultimately we're dealing with this question that we've been discussing today, which is how do you break young people free of the addiction to video games, to artificial computer personas? And so in the closing, we've got about 4 minutes. I'd like each of you to take another shot at your best shot at what we have to do now to change this, to finish off this fascist movement that's being brought in through the internet. So why don't we start with you, Cody?
Well, the key is going to be to go out and bring ideas to people via what we're doing with the science work and the music work. If you give people a sense of beauty, now they have something to counterpose the ugliness of the internet and the MySpace too. I mean, obviously attacking it, it's important to make people self-conscious of what the danger is, what the internet represents, etc. But unless you present them with a counter to that, present them with a solution, all they're going to be left with is confusion. So we have to, on the one hand, expose the insanity of this stuff, but then also counterpose that to the real beauty of the work we're doing in the science, in the music, and then the political leadership that we're giving them, particularly in addressing things like the foreclosure crisis, the banking system collapse, and just the general globalization breakdown. So I think that's going to be the key.
And Ouyang?
Yeah, I can say that in the last week, was we've gone out onto some of the campuses and even off campus, hitting people, you know, up front with some of the problems with their conceptual grasp over reality and pointing out where it's coming from, that actually the response has been pretty immediate, that many people recognize that this is a disease for their generation. You know, people say, yeah, I've been thinking about this too. You know, I'm so glad that you guys are saying this. Or you'll get a polarized response the other way. But I think the idea of the mass effect, going back to something that we really have been perfecting over the last year, starting with the midterm elections, is that you have to set off a social process within the leading edge of the younger generation. And what you're going to find is if you target that, instead of trying to appeal and say, well, we're going to ask for permission from someone in Congress or some higher up, and maybe they'll like our ideas and do something. What we've done with the on-the-ground mobilization just in the last 6 weeks around the HBPA, going into city councils, state legislatures, speaking at public forums, going on the campuses, is that if you're in the pores of society and you're moving the population in the leading layers from the ground up, then you've got a actual leadership capability within the nation, which has the potential to, through the Cooper Project and some of these things, get the better people in positions of responsibility to act. Also, for the next generation, you're creating an actual competent core and a continuity that's going to be able to run the country. And that's what we're confronting, you know, young people with, is that it's going to be our responsibility to direct the next 50 years on the planet.
Well, let me give you a vote of confidence from an email we just got, who says, a comment to the fellow from Australia, obviously referring to Sir Rupert, who was with us earlier. We have personally watched this LaRouche youth movement change world history and the whole way the political establishment is operating, as well as exposing the evil Dick Cheney. We are from the intelligentsia and know that universities are presently dumbing down people. Keep up the good work, Lim. And that's from a Robert Hill in Oakland. So this work that you're doing is not going unnoticed, and I'm sure Nancy Pelosi has a couple of choice words for what you guys are doing up in the Bay Area, Ouyang, but the best words we want to hear from her is, I'm leaving. So
exactly.
We're at the end of our hour, so we're going to have to take leave. I'd like to thank Cody and Ouyang and encourage you to get onto the LaRouche PAC website to follow this fight and to become a part of it, to free this youth generation from being recruited into a fascist movement. As to Sir Rupert, he's always welcome to come back and spew his garbage on this program, because we, unlike Fox, are fair and balanced. So join us next week on the LaRouche Show. Thank you very much.